Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Tux. I'm Mike Collins. This show is coming to you from a packed Divine Barrel Brewing Company in Noda. Let's hear it. And we're coming to you from the Divine Barrel Brewing Company because it just makes sense to talk about changes in the laws governing craft brewing at a brewery. So for quite a while, craft brewers here in Charlotte and around North Carolina have been fighting against forces that limited their success. They argued hard for the right to control their own distribution and to raise the caps on how much product they could make before they lost that control. It took a while, but recently the old state laws governing all of that fell by the wayside in an agreement that allows brewers and distributors to bury the hatchet and gives brewers the control they need to grow and expand their success. Why, the demise of the old laws also benefited craft distillers. They have now overcome arcane rules that prohibited them from selling drinks to customers on the site of their distilleries. They, too, lost the caps, limiting how much of the spirits they produce can be sold to individuals, to you. The new laws were also a boon to cats and dogs. We have a couple of dogs in here tonight already because they are now allowed to come to breweries. A hand for the dogs, yes. All right, we're here to talk about all these changes, what they mean to craft brewing and craft distilleries, and what they mean to you. And to start this conversation off, we're going to meet two of the people who are on the front lines of fighting this battle. Todd Ford is the co-founder and co-owner of Noda Brewing Company, and Ryan Self is director of sales for the Old Mecklenburg Brewery. Welcome back to the program, both of you.
Thanks, Mike.
Good to have you here. And we're also joined by the president of the Distillers Association of North Carolina, Pete Barger, who is also the co-owner of Southern Distilling Company. Thank you for being here as well.
It's my pleasure.
So, Todd, take us back to I kind of alluded to the fight, but take us back to the beginnings of all this and your efforts to change the laws so that you could get the kind of business going that the public is actually demanding. It's clear that they're demanding it from the crowd gathered here and at breweries around Charlotte at this very moment. When did your industry realize this growth and that the growth and demand were not matched up because the laws were preventing you?
We opened in 2011, Noda Brewing, and I think we're probably about 2.5 years into it. If you would have asked me in 2011, 2012, if 25,000 barrels was a lot of beer, I would have said absolutely. There's no way we'll ever see that produced and sold in North Carolina from a local brewery. And what we found is that is just not the case. We have the demographic. We have a population that's very supportive of local artisans, whether it be coffee roasters, whether it be brewers or distillers. And what we're finding is that our neighbors are the reason we had this issue with production. They were buying our product. They were buying Old Mecklenburg's product, Divine Barrels. And we basically were coming up against this limit that was set years ago and quite arbitrarily, it needed to be moved, in my opinion, and the opinion of many others, including Old Mecklenburg, for us to have a chance to succeed.
Because your two breweries and several others in the state kind of commandeered the front lines of this. You were on the front lines. Ryan, I kind of alluded to the caps and the limits that you faced prior to the law change. Explain it in your terms. What did it mean? What were the caps?
So previously, we were limited to self-distribute, which means that we put the beer on our trucks, sent it directly to the bar and restaurants ourselves. It was 25,000 barrels. Now, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that number probably seemed, as Todd mentioned, fairly almost Pollyanna-ish to think, well, we'll never sell that in this very small district, right? But the entire market changed, and craft beer really changed. And all of a sudden, you had a much larger segment of the public drinking craft beer, and that number didn't seem so unattainable anymore. So what we sought was to say, look, we don't want to tear down the entire system. We don't want to rewrite the rules. Let's just make that number commiserate with the state of the market.
But this also dealt with distribution and your ability to control distribution, because if you brewed 25,000 in one barrel, you lost control of the distribution of the whole...
Every bit of our beer at that point would have been on someone else's trucks.
Anheuser-Busch, Coors, all these big brewers use these big distributors. Why can't you, Todd?
Well, we can.
But why don't you want to?
Well, we do in many instances, but we want to do it where it makes sense for our product and for our neighborhood. Where we know the people in Charlotte, it makes a lot more sense for us to sell directly to them. We've been doing it for 8 years now. We are selling one brand. We can service that customer really well with one brand. Now, but at the same time, if I want to go to Wilmington or Asheville, the logistics just don't work out for that same type of customer experience.
Why not?
With us providing it. Well, we're not going to sell the amount of beer in Wilmington that we sell in Charlotte. So applying the same amount of resources to develop that same type of customer service is going to be really difficult. And that's where a distribution model from a third-party distribution outfit really makes sense. That's where they thrive. They can make it make economic sense because they're selling a lot of different brands there.
But you got Old Mecklenburg, I think, was one of the first, weren't you, brewing your own beer?
We were not the first by any stretch. We were the only for a certain amount of time. Some breweries in Charlotte had come and gone by the time we opened up.
So your area of expertise, your front room, is the fact that you know how to brew a beer that people want. And your second room is the fact that people will come to Old Mecklenburg and consume that beer at the brewery. Why do you also want to own the trucks? Why do you want to be driving the trucks to put it in Harris Teeter and at some restaurant 20 miles away? Why not let a distributor do that?
You know, it's a great thing to have folks come to our tap room and drink our beer. That's a lot of fun. We enjoy that. That's part of the experience. But for us, the folks that really built our business are the bars and restaurants, heck, golf courses, sports stadiums, the airport, Harris Teeters. They built our business into what it is. The ability to make it so the consumer can get our beer conveniently near their home. You know, it's still a truth that even as craft beer takes off, most folks don't want to drive by 10 bars to go to the bar that has the beer they want, right? They want it sold in their neighborhood pub. They want it available in their Harris Teeter. They want to go to the ball game and have it on draft. And so that's crucial to us. No brewery wants to survive just by selling, or certainly 10 years ago, selling your own four walls was not a viable model.
Right.
You had to get out there and work with your partners all throughout town.
So 15 years ago, this phenomenon that we're sitting in the middle of tonight was not even on the map. I remember doing a show about 15 or 16 years ago where we were talking about craft beer. And we were talking about craft beer with a single brewer who did it in his basement and distributed it to his family and friends. And we were talking about how he did it and the recipe. Suddenly we have this. And North Carolina seems to, we're not Milwaukee, but we seem to be the epicenter of craft brewing. Is that true? This thing has exploded, Todd.
It feels like that, being a Charlottean and being here since the mid-80s. But I will tell you this, going out in my previous life where I spent a lot of time on the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, this is a phenomenon that's been repeated throughout the country. Now, others will say that maybe Portland or Seattle or maybe even San Diego are a few years ahead of us on the craft beer boom. That might be the case, but we're not the only ones doing this. The only thing I would say is what really benefited Charlotte is the size of the city, the number of transplants that are moving in, many of which are young, educated, free. They have some free discretionary income that they don't mind spending on craft beer. So we really kind of hit it just perfectly.
So Pete Barger is here. He's been sitting very quietly. I don't think he's drinking beer because that would go against the grain.
Keep my wits about me and his crew.
He's the president of the Distillers Association of North Carolina and the co-owner of Southern Distilling Company. It was against the law in North Carolina until 1979. To distill spirits. When did you come along?
Well, we started this project about 8 years ago. But the short story is that we started the project by looking at developing a winery on a farm that we have in Iredell County. And lots of people do a great job with wine, but that was not a business model that looked attractive to us. So we had been in school, as Todd mentioned, on the West Coast, right when craft brewing really started getting a foothold. And saw a lot of similarities between craft brewing 20 years ago and where craft distilling was, say, 5 years ago. So we saw an opportunity to be kind of an early entrant into that market. And so we began building our facility at that point.
Because the first, I think I'm right, that the first distillery was in 2005 in North Carolina.
Right.
How would you compare the growth of the distillery business and some of the struggles that you have faced to what the brewery business has
There's
been
a lot of similarities. There's a lot of parallels. So today there's about 80 licensed, permitted distillery operations here in North Carolina. Some exist on paper.
How many?
80. Eight-zero.
Okay.
So over the course of 3 years, we've really expanded.
Yeah,
but relative to the challenges that these guys faced in brewing, we have the same challenges. We kind of operate with a different regulatory structure because we're a distilled spirits producer instead of a beer or wine producer. But a lot of similarities. So we're kind of brothers in arms.
Yeah. Because 3 years ago, there were 52 distilleries in North Carolina. 80 now, you said?
80.
And that made us the second. We had the second most distilleries in the country.
I think we're number four today.
Okay. Well, we're second only to Kentucky back then. They had 57 and we had 52. We're declining? We're not growing?
Well, we're not declining, but others are growing, right? California's got quite a few.
We were set to surpass Kentucky the very next year. Did we surpass them that very next year?
I don't know if that's the case today or not, okay. But the distilleries in Kentucky are a lot larger.
So in 2017, your company, the Southern Distilling Company in Statesville, I believe, was the largest craft distillery in the Southeast.
That's correct.
How do you explain that?
Our model is a little different. When we started this, we couldn't sell a single bottle out of the front door. So we knew that we were going to have to do things differently in order to be successful. So we saw an opportunity to offer a craft-made product, a product that was grain to glass. We grow about 2,000 acres of grain at any point in time. A lot of that product, 95% of the product that we make actually goes into other brands. So while we have our own brands that are distributed here and around Charlotte, that's only about 5% of our production stream. So we do about 15,000, or have the capacity to do about 15,000 barrels of bourbon, rye, malt on an annual basis.
And what are your brands? Go ahead and give yourself a plug.
Southern Star is our whiskey, so that would be our bourbon and our rye. And then we've got a bourbon coffee cream liqueur called Double Shot, and that's really been kind of the runaway success. We didn't expect it, but people like it.
As you alluded to, some of the challenges that your industry and your distillery have been facing since the laws, before the laws changed, and we'll talk about how the laws changed in a minute, are not unlike what the brewery industry went through, but they were far more onerous because you are making distilled spirits.
Right.
And that's controlled by the ABC board.
It's controlled by the ABC board. I mean, so our regulatory world is pretty complicated. It starts at the federal level. From there, the feds are primarily interested in maintaining the excise tax, but there's a lot of reporting and hoops that need to be jumped through there. But then we come down to the state level, and North Carolina is what's called a control state. We are one of 17 control states. So what that means in simple terms is that the state controls the retail as well as the distribution channels in North Carolina.
We're going to come back and talk about some of these hurdles that you still have to jump through in many cases in just a moment. We're coming to you from the Divine Barrel Brewing Company in Noda with Pete Barger, Ryan Self, and Todd Ford at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're at Divine Barrel Brewing Company in Noda for a conversation about The changing laws that have been governing breweries and distilleries in North Carolina, the sun is breaking through the clouds for these folks, and we wanted to talk about what they faced and the battle to get to where they are and how the laws are changing and what that means to them and to you. Todd Ford is the co-founder and co-owner of Noda Brewing Company, Ryan Self, director of sales for Old Mecklenburg Brewery, and Pete Barger is president of the Distillers Association of North Carolina and the co-owner of the Southern Distilling Company. The laws facing people who distill spirits are different than the breweries, and they're more stringent, and you say they begin at the federal level. And for a long time, some of these things were just crazy. You couldn't sell your product to people who were coming to your distillery.
That's right.
At all. Then they let you sell what?
One bottle per person per year.
If they presented their driver's license.
Right.
Are the gun laws that restrictive?
That's a little bit restrictive, yeah.
Now they've changed the law. We'll talk about that. But at one point, you could only sell quarter-ounce samples.
Well,
is that right?
Let me clarify. We can't sell those. We have to give those away.
Okay.
But, yes, we're limited to pouring quarter-ounce samples of each of our SKUs, up to an ounce and a quarter.
And they had to be straight. They couldn't be mixed with anything
else. Could not be mixed. So if you made a vodka, you had to pour your vodka. You couldn't offer any sort of mixer. And most people don't want to drink a straight vodka.
Yeah.
So it didn't really give us an opportunity to educate our clients and our buyers about what it is that we were trying to sell.
But people like to drink straight bourbon.
They do.
So that
I had an advantage.
That probably helped you because you were. But why?
And we're allowed to mix it with ice, by the way.
Why was that a law? Why did that matter? You couldn't put ginger ale in the bourbon. Why not?
It is a technicality in the statute. It wasn't that they necessarily were against it. It's just that specifically in order to sell a mixed drink or provide a mixed drink, you had to be a mixed beverage permittee, which we were not. We were distilled spirits producers. So technically, we didn't have the right permit to offer that mixer. Now, that's all gone by the wayside now.
Do you foresee, now that the laws have changed, that distilleries will become like the wineries are in Napa Valley and like these breweries are in Charlotte?
That's our goal.
That's the goal?
Yeah. These are our big brothers. We need to, step up and, we've been in their shadows for a long time. And that's really what Senate Bill 290 allows us to do is get a little better market access and some of the things that, our brothers in craft brewing and wine have been able to do for a long time. And we can see the results in North Carolina. So craft wine, craft beer, it's a big economic driver.
Yeah.
We think that craft distilling has the opportunity to sort of take the same sort of place on the stage if we have fair market access. Yeah. Senate Bill 290 gives us that access. So what a lot of folks don't understand is that Senate Bill 290 was actually titled the Distillery Modernization Bill when we released it. So that was a product of our board and our lobbying efforts. Ultimately, there was so much legislation going on that everything kind of glommed on to ours, and it became an omnibus bill.
A lot of people don't know this, and I only know this because we've done programs about it, but prior to Prohibition, wine, North Carolina was the center of wine production, and it completely killed the industry, completely. And a lot of the laws that you folks have been dealing with came from Prohibition, even though Prohibition was repealed, I don't know, what, 90 years ago? Why has it taken so long for attitudes about these laws to change? We're seeing younger people come into breweries. Clearly, they have a completely different attitude about alcoholic beverages and consumption than these laws, the people who put these laws in place 90 years ago. What's taken so long? Why the lag time?
Well, the Southeast is always last, right? I mean, we joke about this quite a bit, but there are folks like yourselves that are excited about craft beer. There are folks that are not so excited about any sort of lessening of limitations on beer. So, part of it's that. We saw a craft beer boom and bubble come and go in the 90s. And now in the aughts, it's come back around.
I was going to ask, is there a bubble? Because look around. I mean, just driving here from downtown, I probably passed 5 or 6 breweries. If you're in South End, there are 10 or 15 more.
Well, why'd you pass them?
I had to get... I had to get here because I know they serve good beer here. Did I save it? Anyway, what was my question going to be? You don't know. Is there a bubble? That was my question. I mean, do you think we're approaching a bubble? How many more breweries can there be?
We don't know yet. You know, that's the simplistic answer. The people of Charlotte will let us know whether we've hit a bubble or not. As long as somebody produces a new product, they do it with ingenuity, they have a new twist on it, and they bring their passion, I think there's room. But we are seeing a very crowded market space right now. Now, the difference is if somebody wants to open up a new brewery and their goal is to be in every Harris Teeter in North Carolina, in South Carolina, and every Publix, that's probably going to be a pipe dream right now. Yeah. That's a really difficult nut to crack just because of the number of SKUs out there and the limited number of shelf space in supermarkets. It's a difficult formula to make.
So, Todd, you mentioned demographics and people coming in from other places as playing a role in the expansion and the success of breweries. But a lot of people, and this includes distilleries and the taste for craft distilled spirits like bourbons and things like that, is tied in some ways, people say, to our expanding palate in America. The food movement has led people to be more discerning. That led to people wanting to taste better wines, more kinds of wines, and compete with what they tasted when they actually tasted those wines. They wanted to be able to explain what it was. That extends to beer. It extends to bourbons, certainly. Is that what's going on, that it's all kind of connected to our expanding and our expanding palates?
You know, I think the simple answer is yes, but the people who know more about this than I go back even further than that, and they said the turning point in the beverage selection industry was Snapple. They said Snapple came out, it came out with, 30, 40, 50 flavors, and you could not put the genie back in the bottle at that time. It became, you know, I don't want 4 soft drinks, I want 30 different flavors of iced tea. And I think what we're seeing now is craft coffee, when Starbucks made the show, people had a much richer experience with a beverage than they'd ever had before. It's really hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
And the same is true with craft beer and craft distilling, too.
Well, I'm glad you said Snapple and not LaCroix. We're doing Charlotte Talks today from the Divine Barrel Brewing Company in Noda. We're here with Todd Ford from Noda Brewing Company, Ryan Self from Old Mecklenburg Brewery, and Pete Barger, who's president of the Distillers Association of North Carolina and a co-founder and co-owner of Southern Distilling Company. People who like craft beer are connoisseurs of beer. They're not just drinking because they're thirsty. They're not just drinking because it's hot. They want the whole flavor and the profile that you provide in whatever craft beers you're producing. And the same is certainly true with distilled spirits, and particularly with bourbons and things like that. I'm stuck on bourbon because I like bourbon. But
man of good
when
taste.
People come to you and buy your product, Pete, what are they looking for that they can't get out of a mass-produced distilled spirit?
I think that it's the same thing that they're looking for when they go get a craft beer or a small label wine. They want a backstory. They want authenticity in that product. They want to understand where the ingredients came from. A lot of times it's as simple as they want something that's unique that the guy next door didn't have, that their dad didn't drink, that their granddad didn't drink. So, you know, all of those things. But I would say that the thing that's probably driving the majority of it is an interest in quality and authenticity and understanding what the backstory is.
What does that mean, authenticity?
If we say it's craft made, tell me how it's craft made. Where did the grains come from? So when you come into our distillery, we've got a video loop playing, and you'll see one of our wheat fields, a 400-acre field, getting harvested right there on that video loop. So they actually have a relationship not just with the brand, but they understand where it came from. The other thing that's kind of cool about that is that field is almost across the street from our distillery. You don't get that with some of the other big brands.
Does that impact the taste, the freshness of it?
Well, somehow? We like to believe that it has a huge impact. I mean, quality ingredients, how we produce it, you know, it is craft.
Is there a terroir to that kind of stuff? I mean, there is in wine. They say you can taste the region the wine, the grape came from. Is the same true?
You really can, particularly with the whiskeys, because the nuances of how the yeast act, on that grain as it's fermenting. We use traditional open-top fermentation, so we're going to get some wild yeast interacting. The other thing is just the environment in which those barrels are aging. You know, so we have a great environment here because of our humidity, our cold winters, our hot summers. So, yeah, it's very unique to the area and to the distillery.
I would think you're at somewhat of a disadvantage when it comes to breweries because beer, the best beer is fresh, and you have to age.
Yeah, you don't want a fresh bourbon.
No.
No. You want a really old bourbon.
So how long does it take a bourbon to come to market?
It really depends on what goes in the barrel. But in order to be a straight product, it has to be in the barrel for 2 years. I'll tell you that 2 years is probably not enough time for most products. But you can get a really nice result in 4 years. And it really depends on how good the product was that went into the barrel. One of the things that we say is that if you make it right before you put it in the barrel doesn't have to make up for the sins of production.
So I know the answer to the question that I'm about to ask you even before I ask it, but I'll ask it anyway. It's more than snob appeal. In other words, if they're coming to you or another craft distiller for a bourbon or some other distilled spirit, there is something there that you cannot get from a Maker's Mark or a Jim Beam or a Johnny Walker.
Right.
What is that?
Well, it's going to be a unique mash bill, number one. A unique mash bill. So the mash bill is the recipe. So one of the things that really drives the flavor profile, though, is the proprietary yeast that we use. So we could take a Maker's Mark mash bill, and we would never be able to hit that flavor profile because what they do with the yeast and what they do in fermentation basically establishes the flavor profile of that product. It's really, really difficult to copy somebody else's product.
So let me ask you guys, the beer guys sitting on the panel, some of the same questions. When people come to your breweries and buy your beers, whether it's there at the grocery store or at a restaurant, what are they looking for that they can't get out of the standard beer? I know the answer to that question, but I'll let you say it.
First of all, Mike, I'll argue your point that in the old days, people just wanted a lawnmower beer, a refreshing beer. That's all they had at that point, right? And so they got what was available in the market. I think as soon as craft beer became available, people have jumped on board and gotten on board because when you drink a beer, it's not meant to be, in my personal opinion, a mass-produced product. The best beer is made locally. We talked about spirits, but beer, when it's fresh, makes a massive, massive difference. Getting something made down the street versus something made across the country or across the ocean. I think that matters. I think beer is a lifestyle brand. I think spirits are as well. And people want to feel like there is a story behind what they have chosen to align themselves with versus just buying the cheapest, whatever gets you drunk, whatever gets you hydrated kind of thing. I think people really respond to that.
But they want a flavor that they never got out of mass-produced American beers, which are kind of just to quench your thirst.
That would just be flavor in itself. You know, generally, most mass-produced beers are engineered to have as little flavor as possible to encourage drinkability. I mean, we talk about how light it is and how cold it is and all the things that intimate no flavor. At the same time, we're never going to be able to produce a light-flavored beer with the consistency that a multi-international conglomerate like, you name the company, we're not going to be able to do that. The good news is we're not trying to. So we have to stay where our game is, and our game is going to be making the craft beverage, just like Pete was talking about, with local grain in many instances, local yeast, local fruit in some instances, but more importantly, we're going to be using our neighbors to make that beer and our neighbors to sell it.
We spent...
And we could be the ones that sit there and talk to the individual and explain to them everything about that product. When they have a question, we can answer it. And we can answer why it is this way and not that way.
We spent 30, 40 years telling the consumer, don't worry, it's beer, but you can't taste it. And it turned out, and you can see in this room, a lot of folks rejected that entire notion on its face.
Yeah.
And said, but I like beer. I want to try it. I want to have some information about it. It's not a chugging liquid. And give me something much better.
Well, we're late to the game because beer, particularly beer you can taste, is popular all over the world, in Germany and Britain and other places like that. Why were we so late to the game? What happened?
Well, you can say we're late to the game. Well, you can say we're late to the game. Beer culture, there are much older beer cultures around the world than here in the U.S. But what I'm finding is we have a connection with a brewery in Great Britain. The hottest thing in Great Britain is beer styles that originated here in the United States. Whether it be IPAs or hazy IPAs, that's what's selling in Great Britain right now with the craft brewers in that area. So, what you know, they exported the concept of beer from Germany and England over to the U.S. We're re-exporting it to them with an American flair.
Is there a trend in beer right now that you're noticing at your two breweries? What are people wanting? What are they asking you for that maybe you don't produce yet? Or
I wish I had a dollar for every time somebody goes, what do you have that's new? And it's a little bit frustrating from the brewer because we work on the concept that we take something, we improve it, we make it as absolutely the best possible product it can be, where it seems like a lot of the interest from our friends and family is, well, that's great, but what do you have that's new?
And I have about a minute left, so Pete, let me ask you. I know that there's been a trend back toward darker liquors.
Right.
Is that what you're seeing as well?
Oh, yeah, we love that trend. So, yeah, we see people moving away from the vodkas. Now, there's a lot of good vodkas out there. We drink vodka, but we are a whiskey producer, and we do see that trend. And the thing, I mean, obviously, bourbon is king, but there's a lot of interest in more traditional American spirits, like rye. Rye are really on the rise right now. One of the things that we're having a lot of fun with is doing single malts. So we can't call it scotch, but it's an American single malt.
Okay.
A lot of fun there.
Pete Berger is with the Southern Distilling Company up in Statesville. Ryan Self is with Old Mecklenburg. Todd Ford is with Noda Brewing Company. We're at the Divine Barrel Brewing Company, and we are coming right back on Charlotte Talks.
One bourbon, one scotch, and one bill. One bourbon, one scotch, and one bill.
After 4 years of construction, the I-77 express lanes are now open for commuters between Lake Norman and Charlotte. WFAE's FAQ City podcast wants to know, what questions do you have about the toll lanes and how they work? Submit your questions now at wfae.org/FAQCity.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We are coming to today from the Divine Barrel Brewing Company in Noda. It's nighttime when we're recording this, so we are up here with people in the bar area, and they're drinking because it's not 9 a.m. It's nighttime. Todd Ford is here. He's the co-owner of Noda Brewing Company. Ryan Self is the director of sales for Old Mecklenburg Brewing Company. And Pete Berger is the president of the Distillers Association of North Carolina and the co-owner of Southern Distilling Company. 2 years ago, Pete, we had Andrew Porter on this program. He's the founder of Doc Porter's Distillery. And he said that at the top of the regulatory chain, as you just said a few minutes ago, is the federal government, and they pose challenges to distilleries right down to the mandate that you have to have a lease on a building that is suitable to be a distillery. It has to be in place a year before they will give you a permit to become a distillery,
right?
And you can't get the state permit until you have the federal permit. Is that still the case, and is that the most difficult hurdle you've had to jump through?
That is still the case. That is not the most difficult hurdle. I wish it were. Yeah, the most difficult hurdle is getting your product into distribution. getting liquid to lips, as we say, and that's what sells product. That is still and probably will always be the biggest challenge.
How do you get, for a craft beer or a craft distillery, how do you get shelf space? And you have to go through the ABC stores. So how do you
honestly
get shelf space?
It's probably easier for me going through the ABC than it is with these guys having to fight for shelf space with the big grocers. You know, that's one of the things that is a benefit to the system that we're in. It's a control state system. It is flawed. It's far from perfect. But it does give us kind of, I won't say an equal footing, but it kind of helps level the playing field with the giants in the industry that are out there.
I mean, would you like to go around the ABC stores? I mean, this new Senate bill has given you a victory. You're able to now, sell five bottles?
No, we're unlimited.
Unlimited. Okay. So it was
five bottles last year.
Okay.
One bottle the year before.
So now it's unlimited. Yeah. So you can pretty much sell anything to anybody as often as you want in your distillery.
Right.
But wouldn't you like to sell at the grocery store? Wouldn't you like to sell at Costco? Wouldn't you like to be at Frugal McDougal's?
Great question. It's a great question. And I would tell you that it's a little counterintuitive. Most people, even some of my colleagues in the industry, would say that privatization is a good thing. And, you know, I'm all about, you know, laissez-faire capitalist markets. But the problem is that we also sell in open states or private states. It's really difficult for me to get shelf space because I'm fighting against the big, big producers. And their checkbooks are a little thicker, you know. So North Carolina is nice because, again, it kind of levels the playing field. And with a lot of the changes that SB 290 brought, it really took away a lot of the issues that we have, like the five bottle per person limit, the inability to sell spirits, or not spirits, but mixed drinks out of our facility. Those are big deals to us.
So are you speaking with your Southern Distilling Company hat on, or with your president of the Distillers Association of North Carolina hat on?
Both.
So do most other distillers, and they're, 80 around the state, feel the same way about that?
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, as my role as president, my role is really to voice the needs and desires of our members. And so this isn't just my opinion. This is the opinion of our members. So we sat down a year ago and developed a legislative agenda. And one of the cornerstones of that agenda was that we weren't going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We were going to stick with the system, but we were going to make the system more efficient and more effective, primarily giving fair market access to small producers like us. So I can't tell you that every distiller in North Carolina agrees with our position, but the majority do.
Okay. Shelf space. I would think by now both of your breweries are pretty well established, Noda and Old Mec. Is shelf space a problem for you, getting on the shelves, getting exposure, getting people to put you on a higher shelf than a lower shelf?
We're looking at each other like, you answer, no, you answer. One of the great things about shelf space is, I think, you know, our local bottle shops are obviously very agile to moving to a new brand. And I think our chains have been as well. You know, we're in Harris Teeter, Publix, Total Wine, Food Lion, some Targets, some Walmarts. And what you find a lot of those chains, when you get to the off-premise level, is it really is something of a meritocracy, which is, if it moves, it stays, right? And we've been very encouraged by that. Harris Teeter's a great example. They've been very aggressive as far as reaching out to us and saying, we're hearing good things about your beer. We're getting asked for your beer by our consumers. Come bring us your product. Come bring us your information. And so I think the old idea of the big chains won't have what the customers want is really broken. They've been pretty agile as far as responding to that demand, and it's been very encouraging.
I think that's a very good point, but I would add also to what Brian already said is there's a responsibility from the supplier, the breweries, to make sure that once they have a commitment from a grocery store to allow some shelf space, that they're there to make sure that they have the constant liquid to put on that space to keep it occupied, because the worst thing you can possibly do is put a beer on a shelf, it sells out, and now it's empty, and you have no more to put back, because the supermarket's going to look at that as lost opportunity. So it is a two-way street. We certainly want them to give us the opportunity in the shelf space, but at the same time, we have to fulfill our part of the bargain, and that's to make sure that we have fresh and consistently supplied product for them to sell too.
You've had a major victory in the distillery industry, in the brewery industry, with the change of the laws. The distillery industry has as well. I know it seemed like a long, drawn-out fight to the three of you, probably over the course of many years. But now it's happened, and I'm wondering if it was speeded along, not just by the fact that legislators can look out at all these breweries in Mecklenburg County and in the Raleigh region and see that there's a demand, but also that they were losing out on tons of tax revenue if they didn't let you expand and fill the demand. How big a role did that realization, do you think, Pete, play in these new laws coming into fruition?
I think that there were three primary things that allowed us to get this bill pushed through into law. One is that all the stakeholders really cooperated this legislative season, whereas in the past we've kind of been adversarial. I think that we found common ground, and that was super beneficial. You know, I think the other big thing here is that we were able to take this out of the context of consumption and put it in the context of business development, economic development, and job growth, particularly in rural areas that really needed it, because this is an agricultural product. So that was huge and really spoke to a lot of the legislature, our legislators. But, you know, quite honestly, the other thing that helped get us through was that there was a lot of focus on privatization. And, you know, we said, well, we're not really going to talk about privatization. We just want these things over here, which are common sense, fair market access issues, will help us grow business and help our communities. Let us do that. We're not going to jump on the privatization bandwagon. And that really played.
I'm trying to find my notes on what the governor had to say when these laws were passed. And I know that one of the things, I can't find it, but one of the things that he pointed to was the number of jobs that breweries and distilleries create and the immense amount of money that they generate for the economy of North Carolina. I can't find the figure now. I think liquor sales in North Carolina are about $1.3 billion a year. That's enormous. But North Carolina produced products only amounted to 0.5% of that.
A lot of opportunity there, Mike.
A lot of, that's what I wrote down here, opportunity.
That's what we're looking at.
So what do you have to do to capture more of the pie?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, some of the common sense changes that this law, you know, allows us to do, like make a mixed drink, you know, actually have our distillery become a destination like the Divine Barrel. I mean, look at all these folks here. You're not going to find my distillery this busy at 6 or 7 o'clock in the afternoon, but maybe we would be if we could sell mixed beverages, beer, and wine, which now we can. You know, so that's one thing. But you know, the other thing is small things that mean a lot to us don't necessarily mean a lot to the general public, like in-store tastings. Remember what I said earlier, liquid to lip sells bottles.
Right.
Nobody's ever heard of my brand. They're probably not going to lay down $40 or $50 for a bottle of my product if they can't try it. By being able to do an in-store tasting, now we're educating that consumer. That's hugely important, and this law allows us to do that. So it's just a lot of common sense, market access, educational things.
So in terms of breweries, the new law has raised the cap from your being able to produce 25,000 barrels of beer and still distribute your own product to 50,000. Given the growth that you have witnessed in the industry, how long will it take you before 50,000 needs to be 75,000?
That's a good question, Mike.
And what happens at 50,000?
What I'll say is next year.
Okay.
That would be great. The industry has changed since we started this legislative agenda. We have a lot more friends here in Charlotte who are opening up craft breweries, and they're enjoying the incredible support of our friends here in Charlotte who come and visit them. And in Divine Barrel, I think they've been open just over a year, and you can look at how well it's going here tonight. I think what's really important about that law is, yeah, we can self-distribute up to 50,000 barrels, but most importantly to me, and I think maybe to Old Mecklenburg as well, is we can produce up to 100,000 barrels before we have to worry about losing our self-distribution capabilities. So now it's not just about us, how much we can self-distribute. we can now go out and sign with the best distribution partners in the land. We're doing it in South Carolina. Old Mecklenburg just did it in Raleigh last week. We can partner with some of these really good distributors and to get our beer out to other areas where we wouldn't be able to do it without losing the concept of our self-distribution.
So when this law passed, it was described as a compromise among the state, among breweries, among distributors. It sounds to me like the distributors kind of lost.
Well, no, I mean, if you listen to the head of the distributor association said he called it a win-win-win. It was a win for the state because the lawmakers were going to have to address this issue for a long, long time, and I agree with that. It was certainly a win for just the smaller suppliers like ourselves who could kind of decide what was the business model they wanted to pursue, but it's also a win for distributors who are now able to sign suppliers like Old Mecklenburg and Noda who didn't have that opportunity before. And whether it'll be us that comes up to the 50,000 barrels first or in 100,000 barrels, I don't know.
Yeah.
It may be us. It may be somebody else. It's not a goal that we're shooting for, but it's a possibility at least.
Well, and to the credit of the distributors, the compromise that was reached was brought to the table by their lobby. And we saw that and said that makes complete sense for all involved, which is we get what we all really wanted, which is to maintain our backyards. To never say, I've got to hire someone else's truck to ship my beer 10 miles up the street. And for places like Raleigh where it makes sense, we will utilize those companies whose skill is logistics and we'll use them. So I don't think that's a compromise. I think that is a true compromise in that sense that all sides, in a sense, probably got what they wanted.
And Pete, you were joined in your fight to have your laws changed by the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association.
Right.
Why did they want to partner with you? And a few others as well, but why did they want to partner with you? And who was the enemy? Who were you fighting against?
We only had one adversary left in the room at the end of the day.
Okay.
And that was the religious right who, you know, they don't think drinking is a good thing, and they don't want to enable drinking. So, but what we were really successful in doing, with that one exception, was bringing folks like the Restaurant and Lodging Association, the Association of Boards, and these are the 170 boards that operate the ABC stores, a lot of the wholesalers to the Spirits Association. Probably, you know, we just got everybody in a room together and kind of talked out what it is that we needed out of this legislation. So it was a real compromise.
Can you now sell your product directly to restaurants and bars?
We cannot self-distribute.
So it has to go through ABC.
So without getting overly technical, there is a well-established three-tier system throughout the U.S.
Okay.
So you've got supplier, we're a supplier, wholesalers, and then retailers.
So the fact that the brewers can now distribute their own beer wherever they want to, however they want to, up to 100,000 barrels, that means people from Asheville and
up to a 50,000.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. It's very confusing.
Sorry,
but that means beer breweries, if there is one in Wilmington, certainly there are in Asheville, they can bring their stuff here. That means competition. Is that a good thing?
It must be a good thing. I think the breweries here in North Carolina are some of the best in the world. We're the best in the world because we have over 400 breweries here in the state.
Yeah.
And if you don't make good product, you need to be worried because there'll be somebody else who makes a great product and who will remove you from the market.
Mike, going back to your bubble conversation earlier, we are nowhere close to breweries per capita than Asheville, much less Portland, Oregon, Denver. We are nowhere close to a bubble. It's not about limiting number of breweries, limiting breweries that can sell here. We welcome a free market. What it's about is changing the hearts and minds and taste buds of residents here. If everyone in Charlotte said, I'm going to drink a beer that's made in North Carolina, we'd all be doing just fine.
So when these two battles were going on to have these laws changed, the laws were described, I only have 20 seconds, laws were described as outdated and arguably draconian with regard to the alcohol control system. Are they still, yes or no?
Way better than they used to be.
Same.
They're a lot better.
Okay. I'll give Pete Barger the last word. He's the president and co-owner of Distillers Association of North Carolina and Southern Distilleries. Ryan Self with Old Mecklenburg Brewery and Todd Ford with Nodaw Brewing Company. And we came to you today from Divine Barrel Brewing in Nodaw. Thank you all.
Cheers.
For the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.